John Judge, the researcher who lives in Washington, D.C., is out on the West Coast again. He does work with several organizations in San Francisco and Berkeley. He's going to be speaking. The address is 6401 Freedom Boulevard this coming Sunday night, December the 6th, this next Sunday night, December the 6th, at the Unitarian Church. It's going to be 11 to 12:15 in the morning. He'll be speaking to the church group, and you can have a chance to meet him. Paul Blue is his host. Exit off Highway 1 on Freedom Boulevard and go 1 mile to McDonald and Freedom, and you'll get a chance to meet John and share some time with him. He works on Sunday, and it's hard to get down. If it's possible to work a Monday, if he can get off, maybe I'll have him as a guest, but his job is Sunday through Thursday, so I haven't been able to work something out for him to come on World Watchers. But he is an expert on the Kennedy assassination, on the overview of what's happened in this world, of Jonestown, of the Iran-Contra affair, and also the planned genocide for blacks that has gone on through the years. He's taken my tapes all these years, and like David Emery, they take the basic work and then continue and fill in pieces, and they have time to add more hours that they can do to it. And we share information, so I think a lot of you have enjoyed John Judge. So try and make it to the Unitarian Church, 11 to 12:15 a.m., Sunday, December the 6th. Now, this is Mae Brussel, and it is the second half of broadcast number 834. The story about Aquino, I think you get the point of the importance with NATO, the rituals, the Hall of the Dead. Now, I have several books, quite a few books on the Waffen SS, many of them, so I don't take all of this lightly. I've studied it for a long time. There's a chapter in a book called God and Beasts, the Nazis and the Occult, and I thought I would share with you a few sentences out of this book. It's written by Dusty Sklar. It came out in 1977 because when I go further into some of the things we're hearing that sound outrageous or read, it's better to have background of the thinking of these people, wondering how do you sacrifice humans. On the Geraldo Rivera show, this lady tells about watching child sacrifices and cutting their heart out when they're alive and cutting those little children up and eating them and burning people alive. Geraldo Rivera, who has a family now, he just took a deep breath and took a break after the 20 minutes and apologized and said he wasn't sorry to have it on, but he apologized if there were children of an informative age home listening to that, and suggested that the parents divert them away from the television because they were talking about the raw facts of what's going on in America. Now, in this book, God and the Beast, just a few sentences about Heinrich Himmler and how the Waffen SS operated. Dusty explains that Himmler studied the occult. He was interested in it. He had a huge library on the occult, everything he could get, and spiritualism. And he studied a man, Karl Deprell's book, Der Spiritismus. Now, I'm not going to pronounce these words right. Der Spiritismus, called Spiritualism. And he believed, according to this account, that there was something important about the transmigration of souls, and it gave him a new meaning, studying life and death. And this author says his interest in and sympathy with the occult endured throughout his entire life, and without it, the Reichsführer of the Waffen-SS would have been quite a different person if he didn't believe in it. His occultism, along with Hitler's belief in it, was bound up in eroticism and sex. And, of course, there is sexual abuse in all of these Satan rituals. To Hitler and Lance, a gentleman named Lance, and Adolf Hitler and Heinrich Himmler, sexuality was decadent. And the loose morality of Western Europe after the war seemed to them to travel like a plague spread by the decadent people, namely the Jews. Think of the movie The Cabaret, and a lot of nightclubs were run by Jews in Germany. They believed the Jews were bestial in their passions, corrupting pure German womanhood, making women join the radical cause of feminism. They saw the Jews as cunning, practical pimps and pornographers, able to profit materially from prostitution and interest in filth, and these were popular themes for Himmler. Right after World War I, Himmler was in contact with a number of persons who were part of the Fry Corps. Those were the young groups that went out ruthlessly killing professors, teachers, people at random. In 1923, he joined the Fry Corps. And as a matter of fact, there have been articles that compared Oliver North's activities to the German Fry Corps. And this author said he must have enjoyed participating in the grand design to lead Germany to their greatness. He believed the Nazis would lead Germany because they were superior. And these people were frustrated with ambitions as soldiers having lost World War One. In 1925, the SS, the Schutzstaffel, the Waffen-SS, was formed as the bodyguard for Adolf Hitler in every district. Himmler was put in charge of the local units. By 1927, when the SS was nationalized, Himmler, because of his demonstrated abilities, was made deputy leader in 1929, the Reichsführer-SS. Then the organization became a central bureaucracy to dispense terrorism, an elite political police giving Himmler power, second Adolf Hitler. What fitted Himmler for the job was his skill as pigeonholing people, assigning categories and putting them into these spots. He was able to compel his black guards to go against their own standards of morality and justify horrifying murder tactics as a utopian idealism, the killing. He said proudly of his black uniformed SS, "I know there are many people in Germany who feel sick when they see this black tunic. We can understand this, and we do not expect to be beloved by many people." Sometimes he saw the black guards as elite cadre of the Teutonic warriors, as medieval knights protecting their lord, Adolf Hitler. His interest in the Germanic past in the Middle Ages went back to his youth. He believed in transmigration of souls, and he believed in the reincarnation, that he was the reincarnation of the 10th century German Heinrich I the Fowler, with whom he communicated in his sleep. In 1937, he had the monarch's bones dug up and put in the crypt of Quedlinburg Cathedral after a holy procession in 1937. In this time period, Heinrich Himmler was in charge of the International Police, and J. Edgar Hoover in the United States was vice president of Interpol at this end of the United States, corresponding and working with names with Heinrich Himmler. But that's an aside. That comes from the book Interpol. I'm reading from Gods, Beasts, and the Nazis. He chose the town of Quedlinburg in the Harz Mountains because it was founded by the king. He was the reincarnation. Himmler invited Germans to make a pilgrimage to the tomb to honor Heinrich the Fowler. Yearly, on July the 2nd, the date of the king's death, Himmler held a midnight ritual in a clammy crypt. One of the great charms which the medieval monarch had for Himmler was his anti-Slav crusade. And he thought that was wonderful. On the 1000th anniversary of Heinrich's death, Himmler stood before Wehrmacht officers and braided and medaled SS dignitaries and continued the crusade for Germany's expansion to the east that Heinrich had left off. Himmler was obsessed, along with Hitler, with secret medieval society called the Order of the Teutonic Knights. And there, a candidate had to prove noble German ancestry for 8 generations on both sides of the family tree. And then the Waffen-SS, it goes back 6 generations. And I have at my home a copy of the Waffen-SS papers of Otto von Bolschwing, whose secretary was Reagan's appointment secretary, Helene von Damm, and then our ambassador to Vienna. She made the appointments of the Stanford Technology Trading Group, the Hakim Secords at National Security Council. She made these appointments for Reagan. She worked with Otto von Bolschwing, who was a member of the Waffen-SS going back those 600 years. I have that family chart at my home. The article says Himmler, in creating a secret order suitable for mass society, dispensed with any idea of social or economic aristocracy. The whole Aryan race was aristocratic. He admired the rigid organization of the Teutonic Knights, the strictness of their rules. Above all, he admired their secrecy. He kept writing down things on people. Secrecy is what he admired most. He was a fanatical as a spy for the party. He knew what a powerful motivation it is to belong to a secret order with different rules and a hierarchical structure that could be, its mere existence could hold members in a common bond, subject to the same vows of silence or certain questions. And I wonder about Aquino becoming Church of Satan with psychological control in Vietnam, if this secret society, which came home, he came over, came home a high priest in the Church of Set, if the Waffen-SS wasn't setting it up over there to bring them home, and they liked this secret order. In trying to create a new order of Teutonic Knights out of the SS, Himmler was mindful of the power of the Jesuits. According to his assistant, Walter Schellenberg, he deliberately built the SS on the principles of the Society of Jesus, using their statutes and spiritual exercises. Himmler was called the Black Jesuit by his enemies, and he was compared with the order's founder, Ignatius Loyola, by Hitler, who was pleased to have his fanatical devotion. And incidentally, the two parts of the church, a lot of people don't know this, of the Catholic Church, the twins of the church. One is the Pope, who is called the White Pope, and the Jesuits, who do the converting and set up the missionaries and so forth, that is the Black. The head of that is the Black, and Himmler was called the Black Jesuit. After the order's founder, Ignatius Loyola, Schellenberg testified at the Nuremberg trials that Himmler had the best and richest library of the Jesuit order. His literature was pursued at night for years. He built his SS organization according to Jesuit principles. And of course, you remember, or maybe you don't, the Inquisition and the torture racks and the wiping out of civilizations such as the Mayans and the Incas and the American Indians, the westward movement, wiping out these organizations and the missions, treatment of genocide towards the Indians in this country up and down this coast. He built his organization according to that. Its basis was the Constitution for the exercises of Ignatius de Loyola. And this is not reading from this book, Gods, Beasts, and Nazis and the Occult. This is not anti-Catholic. There are Catholic Jesuits now, such as the Christic Institute. Bill Davis is a Jesuit priest, and the sanctuary movement is set up by Jesuits. There is a whole branch now that are being very liberal, but we're talking about those that are pursuing it from a far, far right mentality and get the go-ahead from the Vatican for these activities, such as the 3A, the death squads in South and Central America, and even now in the Philippines. This book says the supreme law was absolute in that church, and Himmler had been brought up as a Catholic. Blind obedience, and he himself, an SS general, was the order's general commander. In Westphalia, near Paderborn, he kept a medieval castle, the Wevelsburg, which served, so to say, as the SS monastery. The roots of this attitude go back to his father's education and his severe Catholic conduct of life. And it's in this church, on NATO maneuvers, a man with a top highest security clearance working for and taking members of the Joint's chief of staff to the cult rituals of death. Westphalia is where Mr. Michael Aquino, we know he was there once. Probably he could go there every year. We wouldn't know. But he has written about his experiences with the Joint Chiefs and NATO exercises at the castle in Westphalia. And then this description from Dusty Sklar says, the essential principle which Heinrich Himmler borrowed was the oath of absolute blind obedience. He outdid the Jesuits. In order to eliminate all possible competition to his esoteric order that he had, the SS had a common enemy with the church, which was the Freemasons, and his resistance to their doctrine. He fought the Freemasons. Heinrich Himmler had no appreciation for them or the Counter-Reformation, and he studied and also wanted to do with all of those people who opposed his order. But his order went above the Jesuits. He became supreme over them and even broke with them. And the book says Himmler's views and deeds, and this is very important, were not the excess of madness. They were not always rational, but they were not madness. They owe more to the disassociation of a fanatical occultist than to a divided personality. He spent much of his time and that of his men in investigating all kinds of research, and it didn't diminish his talent at all for a efficient organization. He wasn't split up to be in a mental hospital. He functioned really well. If his reality was non-ordinary, like Michael Aquino, he was not crazy at all. He was rather a person who was interested in good and evil spirits, in invisible power, and he felt one day we will have to give an account of ourselves, that there's karma for our deeds, and this is very important. He felt that for his karma, that you have to teach a person to look for the whole. He saw the world as a Germanic Aryan whole. He saw the whole world as a whole. And anybody who didn't serve the Germanic whole would have bad karma. You didn't have bad karma if you killed 6 or 20 million or 80 million. You had it if you didn't serve Germany the whole. When he went before his master, he was going to say, I did what you wanted me to for Germany. And this Dusty Sklar said, a man has to sacrifice himself, according to Himmler, even though it is hard for him to do. He oughtn't to think of himself. It is pleasanter to concern yourself with flower beds rather than political dust heaps and refuse dumps. But flowers themselves won't thrive unless these things are seen to. Over and over again, Himmler referred to the work of his SS men when they were placed in concentration camps to torture or murder alive or shoot as their sacrifice. It was as though they had to suffer a greater ordeal than their victims. One of his most interesting speeches to officers sympathizes with their ordeal. To have stuck it out and at the same time to have remained a decent fellow. That is what makes us hard. To do anything we're told and then remain decent makes us hard. This is a page of glory in our history, he wrote, which has never been written and is never to be written. Every cause has its idea of sacrifice, calling on individuals to give up their well-being for the sake of something greater. Himmler's idea of sacrifice was influenced by Eastern philosophy. He learned to practice, after the sayings of Buddha and Rig Veda and others, that detachment for your acts can be done. While it might seem silly or monstrous or foolish, the purifying of it, it was purifying to the wise. Karma required, with the Waffen-SS, the way he turned it around, it required only that individuals carry on their unavoidable duties, discarding any consequences. You won't lose sleep at night discarding any consequences. You take your unavoidable duty. If it's a thousand-year Reich, that's what you do. He said one should not give up that act. One should not give up the activity to which one is born. If you're born to lead the SS, the duty incumbent on one through birth or caste or profession, even though this might be attended by evil. For all undertakings are enveloped by evil as fire by smoke. The disengagement from the effects of fulfilling one's duties was self-sacrifice. And this book in this chapter on the obedient man explains how he felt that people would not be serving their duty if they didn't serve the thousand-year Reich. And whatever it took to kill or maim or to wipe out, you were doing it for the Aryans, for the Germans, and amorality is something relative. You don't have to deal with it. It could be linked with divine essence. And he said that the main job is that if the Aryans are the greatest and if it's necessary to kill everyone who isn't an Aryan, we'll do it. You can do it without guilt. It's a sacrifice to learn to kill and spill the blood, but you must learn to sacrifice. Now, on some more to Michael Aquino, there's an article this past weekend in the San Francisco Chronicle, Steps to Abolish New York Vigilante Child Protectors. This was November 24th. The state of New York is getting rid of the Westchester County Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Children because it turned out to be an armed secret police accountable to absolutely no one. It's a bunch of vigilantes brandishing weapons and running their own office there, a terrorism unit set up in New York, and one of the investigators said his office went into the Westchester organization. They received complaints that the members used dangerous, abusive techniques during warrantless arrests and detainments and regarding the welfare of minors, and that they found an arsenal of pistols more powerful than those used by most police departments. So there was a society in Westchester County for the prevention of cruelty to children, and it is armed and filled with secret police weapons the police use, and even more, and brandishing weapons, handcuffs, and so forth. Then there was a story in the New York Times, November 20th, Army will close child care center, and it refers to San Francisco and the Presidio. It mentions Gary Hambright, who is under indictment for 10 molestations. Not a word, coast to coast, on the wire services about Michael Aquino. It says allegations of sexual abuse have surfaced. There's 300 child care centers, 94,000 children daily are being taken care of by the Army, and they've had complaints of at Fort Dix and at other Army centers, quite a few, 10% of all the Army centers out of 300. So you can 10% of that and see how many children have been reported being abused. Another article, San Francisco cop pleads guilty in arms case, and the San Francisco police have protected this Aquino. A member of the police department said she tried, as I quoted before, to get him out of the Army in 1983. This policeman was just sent 15 years in prison because he was getting weapons from the munitions from Camp Pendleton, the Marine base in San Diego. He had received 10 stolen hand grenades. He then had 62 other grenades, 122 pounds of plastic explosives, 11,000 rounds of ammunition, 30 blasting caps, illegal sale of guns. A member of the San Francisco Police Department stockpiling these weapons. And that's how Frank Turpel and George Corcula got arrested in 1979, selling, I think it was $1 or $2 million round of ammunition to private people in the New York Police Department. In terms of children being molested, I don't know how many of you saw an ad in the San Francisco Chronicle. Those in the East wouldn't have seen this. The article's called Gross Toys for Shockproof Kids When Holiday Fun is Ugly. It's from the San Francisco Chronicle. Some of the toys, one is a monster built from scratch with boiling flesh that comes off to the bones. Another is a Squeeze Sammy, an alien blood, it's supposed to be an alien blood pours out from his nose. Another is a sizzle clay-like monster where the flesh peels, it fills into a vat, and there's a secret formula and the flesh starts it to froth. Another toy is an alien visitor whose organs are yanked out by the internal organs are covered with gooey glow in the dark alien blood. And another, executions in your own living room, it's advertised. American Greetings Corporation, Amtoy, makes a plastic monster. Its head blows open. Its brains are exposed. There's dangling eyeballs and mossy teeth. And G.I. Joe, a new one, sells for $200 that advertises, we can kill anything known in the universe. Those are the toys for Christmas. Keep in mind the children in the daycare centers and what they're growing up to be. Now, KTVU in San Francisco had a 10-minute interview with Michael Aquino this past week. As I mentioned, they had pictures of his Waffen SS video, among other things, in his room. And this was the movie that had Sandra Gallant from the San Francisco Police Department discussing his love affair with the Nazis, Nazi uniforms, Nazi flags, memorabilia in the house, and said that his mother was engaged to a Waffen SS in the 1930s. She allegedly married another man. We'll have to assume she did. And she's a millionaire and lives in San Francisco. This weekend, I saw a videotape, which I bought, called Of Pure Blood. And there's a book out by the same title, Of Pure Blood, by Clarissa Mark Hillel and Clarissa Henry McGraw-Hill, 1976. And the videotape was on television a few years ago, and I was able to buy it last week, and it tells it, and I'll do more details on it again, on creating a baby for the Führer from every single family in Germany. And he went to the campus, to the educated, which reminds me of the dating service that Douglas Ginsburg was running, and I believe it was a government-related service. And they made these children, and this Liebersborn program is the most secretive of anything that ever happened in Nazi Germany. And Heinrich Himmler got the idea in 1935, but it was well into operation by 1943 to 45, where they would have a million persons in the service of Adolf Hitler by 1980. So a good guess is that people in the 40-year-old age range or 45 today, they didn't all come and be born at one time. There were many houses. They kidnapped children from their parents, these missing children. They never returned to their parents. They looked for the brightest children in the occupied countries because they didn't want the brightest ones opposing them. So they took the brightest into the Hitler Youth and raised them and killed the parents, the mothers and fathers, and just stole them. They were of pure blood Aryan children that they wanted in their army, so they picked them up and stole them. I'll do more on that movie. But I want to share with you what was on Geraldo Rivera's program. Oh, also in the news program on the 10-minute segment, they said, is the Aquino case over? He hasn't been charged with the Presidio. And they said, no, there are still questions of child stealing, this NATO man, child abuse, child neglect, child molestation, and they're still going into that. Well, I have about 2 minutes just to mention, I'll probably have to begin with it next week. Geraldo Rivera had a program on the satanic cults and a woman who had been in one for 27 years. They described the meeting, last meeting that took place was in 1981 in Mexico, and notes were available telling their plans for recruiting in the future, which began in 1982, that they would go to preschool children and get their army of the future. And they practice black witchcraft. They're criminals with criminal intent to infiltrate the schools, the nursery schools, the grammar schools, the high schools. And the woman who was testifying about her experiences, Geraldo Rivera, said, did you ever abuse children? And she said, yes, she saw her first sacrifice when a live baby was cut open and they took out the heart. And she said, they totally control you, and they mean it. And once you see it, you know it. And this program was about West Point. Another person from West Point was a guest on this program, and he talked about the Child Abuse Center and how he was asked to leave, that they preferred to cover it up, and how the children, little daughter, was dressed as a bride and married to the devil. And then they would see dogs killed and people tortured and burnt. And they also were told there was psychic surgery where they gave them a shot and evidently put them to sleep and told them they put a monkey in their stomach. And every time they were going to tell about this, they would get a pain in their stomach so they couldn't tell. And they actually saw people burning. This was a visit to the West Point chapel while the parents were at the Christian church. The child was left at the school, at the play school, which was run by two women of the Church of Satan. And the story of the pain that these children go through was told at great length on this broadcast. It was an hour broadcast, and I don't know how many of you saw it, but it was very vivid, and Geraldo Rivera was somewhat upset. He had this witness behind one of those screens and another woman who had been part of this, and how they have to keep running and hiding, because once they reveal it, they're killed, and they've been threatened to be killed. And they talked about cannibalism, eating people, adult killing, police abuse, people as policemen abusing the children. So that is another part of this broadcast. As I say, next week I will do some more and then leave it off for 3 weeks. Not that we can't go on, but in lieu of Christmas and a new year, we'll get back to it later. In conclusion, we want to thank Coast Components at 684-1185, the Monterey Bay Area's distributor of electronic components. Thank you for the underwriting grant that brought you the past hour of World Watchers. The previous hour of World Watchers was made possible in part by Lowdown, a leading manufacturer of microcomputer peripherals located in Scotts Valley. For more information, call 438-7400. I'll be back with you in a few minutes to continue with the talk show part of the program.